Heavy action movies.
Yeah.
Quickly, what movies do you like watching?
Anything with Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal.
Mel Gibson.
Those are old people.
Sylvester Stallone. Sylvester Jason Statham. The who are the newer guys? Gerard
Your
Butler.
Favorite of all time?
All days, Clint Eastwood.
What?
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, you're too young then.
Books that you read?
I got no time to read anything. The only thing I read is WhatsApp. You will never look for money. Money will come to you. As a policy, we don't have fundraisers. People just
you don't have a fundraising department.
No, we don't. As a policy, we don't have that. We're the most fortunate position that corporates tell other organizations we'll see you in 6 weeks' time or 2 months' time. We tell the corporates when we will see them.
That's
we have to take a number. Well, you're right now, I'm talking to my office. I said there's so many people, I can't see them. We make appointments for a month time.
You turn away.
We don't turn them away because what we do, we're very good at what we do. We can't give a half a job. If you're saying yes, 100,000 rand, and I want it for this, we're going to make sure we're going to give you 200,000 rand of value for your 100,000 rand. We're going to do it properly for your money and people.
On that point of, you know, publicizing all of these things, what about the spirituality of that in terms of, you know, someone would say, but you're putting people's poverty on display, something like that. Leaders and thinkers, movers and shakers, welcome to another episode of the GLC podcast. My name is Luphumlo Joko. I've got a very, very special guest. You know, I always say I've got a very, very special guest, but today is just, it's just extraordinary. Dr. Suleiman, founder of Gift of the Givers Foundation, global humanitarian, is someone that we all know. Doc, thank you so much for sitting down with us. Thank you for your time. Actually, before we even start, I was chatting to your colleague over there. She was telling me that you barely get sleep. You don't sleep. You're like, you're always, you know, is that true?
Well, last night is a case in point. I got back from Cape Town to Durban, and the road from Durban to Pietermaritzburg is normally 50 minutes. It took me 9 hours. The highway was closed. There was an accident. I was 12 kilometers from my home, and the road was closed. I got home at 2:30 this morning, went to bed at 3:45, up at 6, and I was back at the airport.
4, up at 6?
Yeah, and up at 6, we'd have to take another flight to Johannesburg to do an event for a company. I did a podcast, some meetings, and I flew to the city. And I've got events tonight now.
You've got an event tonight as well?
Yeah.
After this?
Yes.
Oh, my word. You know, as I said before you got started, a lot of people still don't know. I was chatting to someone today, and I was telling them that I'm having a conversation with you later on. And she had a lot of questions about the work that you do. So I know that your journey started, you know, when you started the foundation. Maybe if you could take us back to when you had that conversation with your spiritual leader, what was happening in your life? Maybe if I can ask even before then, because the one thing I've really been intrigued by and been interested in is how your life was before that conversation with your spiritual leader and before you had that burden to assist and to help humanity. What were you doing? What was happening in your life?
Okay. The official date when people look at Gift of the Givers is 6 August 1992.
Mm.
But they need to understand that Gift of the Givers is not my organization.
Yeah.
And I explained that. It's a very spiritual basis to come to the question that you asked. It has a very strong spiritual basis. And when I look at that, that spiritual basis started actually in 1985.
Mm.
I was doing internship in King Edward Hospital in Durban, you know, my last year of medicine.
Yeah.
And of course, 6 years, you get caught up in medical school. I was involved in a lot of organizations and youth development and, you know, speaking at Friday prayers at the mosque and that kind of stuff. And involved. So I was involved in a lot of organizations. And then I got an internship. You don't see the difference between day and night.
Mm.
Long hours of work. And in internship, as all youth, you know, all have ideals, they have desires, they have goals.
Mm.
And they say, I'm going to do this, that, and the other in life. So while doing internship, that's not the end of medicine. I said to myself, next year I will be a medical officer and then I'll become a registrar and I'll study further and I'll become a specialist, a consultant physician in internal medicine. But it didn't work out that way. You know, there was no opportunity to study. There was no post. I couldn't go forward. A lot of youth are faced with the same challenges.
Yeah.
Now you have two choices. You can sit in a corner and you can wail and you can mope and you can be depressed and you can cry, or you use your innate God-given potential and say, I'll try something different.
Mm.
And I decided that I'll go into GP practice. It's something that I never wanted to do. But under the circumstances, you have to do something to take you to the goals that you want to achieve. So whilst you've got the skills, do something else. From the spiritual point of view, we don't ever pray for what we want. We pray for what is good for us.
Mm.
Because what you want may not necessarily be good for you.
Mm.
And not sometimes, whenever some things don't work out, go back, analyze, look at it and say, why? And maybe you'll get an answer.
Mm.
You're going the wrong direction. You should be going somewhere else. So don't let an obstacle be it's the end of the world. Rather, the obstacle be the beginning of a new life,
mm.
something different. Always look at it that way.
Mm.
So in 1986, I decided to move to Pietermaritzburg to start my private practice. And the same week, I got into Maritzburg. An Afrikaner guy from Pretoria also moved to Maritzburg. But he was in the States. He went to some kind of scholarship, sports scholarship. My neighbor, because I got a new neighbor now, because I'm in a new building in a new city, tells me that there's this Afrikaner guy. He came to buy meat from me. My neighbor's a butcher. And he needs a doctor. So I meet him. I treat him. We speak. We discuss. And then one day he tells me, you know, I was walking through the streets of New York. And I was very dejected. Much like how many youth feel.
Mm.
And I was depressed. I was empty. My soul and my spirit felt empty. I felt devoid of anything. In that sad state, I see a man looking at me from the corner of the road. I don't know this man, but my heart tells me to follow this man. We have a teaching again. When you're uncertain about something, listen very carefully to your heart, not your head. So he follows the man. The man walks and enters St. John the Divine. It's a huge church in New York, which I visited.
St. John the Divine.
Yes, yes. It's a huge church. I went there in 2010 on my way to Haiti. Because of that very reason of that man. He said, when the man entered the church and I entered the church, I realized the man was a Muslim, a Sufi, a master of spirituality.
A Sufi? What's that?
It's a special branch of Islamic theology.
Okay.
Where the spirit of the law it overrides the letter of the law.
Okay.
It's a long explanation. But in essence, it's about serving mankind and doing good.
Okay.
Everything about service. Its emphasis is first service, love, compassion, and kindness. Mm. And he said the man was a Turk. In the church, the man then does a zikr. Now, zikr is an Islamic practice. It's not a Christian practice.
Mm.
It's an Islamic practice where you chant God's names in Arabic.
Mm.
So if you translate it in the different scriptures, it would mean God, the one and only, kind, compassionate, merciful, living, eternal, absolute, cherisher, nourisher, sustainer, and so it goes.
Mm.
And he said he chanted the zikr in Arabic and people joined him. But in that church, there was Jewish rabbis, Christian priests, Hindu pandits, other Muslims and people of faith and of no religion. And they all participated in the zikr. And then that drew a very important point. You see, people tell us that religion is the cause of conflict.
Mm.
This actually proved that religion is not the cause of conflict. That the Christian elders of the church understood the unity of religion. They understood the unity of mankind. That we all come from the same source. Mm. And they had no issue with the Muslim guy reciting a zikr in the church. We then understand it further. That religion is not the cause of conflict. People who move away from religion cause conflict. Because in essence, religion teaches peace. Love, respect, understanding. In the same way, you won't say, if a lawyer steals from the road accident fund, you won't say that the law society is a mess, you know. You'll say the lawyer is a bad guy. But in religion, why do we condemn all followers? When it comes to medicine, if a doctor does malpractice, you don't say the medical profession is rotten, write it off. You say the doctor is the bad guy.
Unless all of the doctors are rotten.
Exactly. So we need to look at the way we position and say things. So Mullen and I started speaking again. And he tells me, you need to go to Turkey. So I said, why? He said, the man I spoke about is a Turk. He's from Turkey. He's not from America. He comes there often. But you have to go to Turkey. That's where the base is. So I said, Mullen, It's 1986. I still haven't seen Cape Town. When am I going to get to Turkey? He says something very important. Important to understand the power of faith and the power of spirituality.
Yeah.
So Miller says, what God wills happens.
Mm.
There's a time and a place. And 5 years later, it happened. My wife and I landed up in Turkey. It's a long story why we got there and what we went for. But 5 years later, we got into Turkey in August 91. I saw the spiritual teacher, not the one that Miller met.
Were you going there to see the spiritual teacher?
No.
Or you,
okay, it was some, I was actually on my way to Bangladesh to deliver aid to the cyclone victims.
So you had already started then?
That was pre-Gift of the Givers. Okay. I was involved in social work in pre-Gift of the Givers. Okay. I was involved with youth. I did a mission to Mozambique during the, there was a drought there. When Saddam invaded Kuwait, funding in Mozambique collapsed. So the Mozambican government and people required assistance.
Mm.
And we went there and we drilled 30 boreholes. We put in malaria medication. We helped the hospital. In 91, I got involved in the Gulf War. And in 91, at some point, we got involved in taking aid. And it is different in Bangladesh, really fun. Iraq, really fun. Mozambique, really fun. Mm. I wasn't in an organization then.
Mm.
And in the process, I landed up in Turkey because of that mission. And the teacher I met was the new one. Mm. It was the one that Miller met had passed on in 1985.
I see.
But as part of succession in spiritual law, in Sufi law, the next teacher takes on and it carries on as a whole chain of, now we're on the 22nd teacher right now from the history. So I went there. What Miller saw in New York, I saw in Istanbul.
Mm.
You know, people from all religion, all nationalities, all in a Muslim holy place. But what is amazing that this is post-Gulf War. Gulf War had polarized the world into different religions and different civilizations that had conflict with each other. But yet there were Christians, Jews, Hindus, Muslims, people who said they don't believe, people said they're not from, and they're not certain, they don't have any faith. Americans, Russians, people from Europe, you know, Australia, New Zealand, South America, Africa, Asia. The amazing thing was there was absolute respect for each other.
Mm.
No conflict, no friction. And that's the kind of thing you want to see happen in the whole world.
Yeah.
The spiritual teacher sees me, sees that, you know, I'm stunned watching all this that's going on. How is this possible? And he tells me, my son, mankind is one single nation.
Mm.
The God of all mankind is one. We just call him by different names. Any imam, priest, sheikh, Sufi, pandit, or anyone else who promotes violence, extremism, terrorism, discord, conflict, confrontation, and disorder is not a man of God.
Mm.
Don't follow him. The real person of God is he who promotes love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. I fell in love with that concept.
Yeah.
Again, went back to my wife and I went back to South Africa. A year later, my heart was yearning for that place because I felt a huge spiritual upliftment.
That's 19?
92.
92.
I can't explain the spiritual upliftment. It's something you've got to feel to understand it.
Mm.
Anyway, 6 August 1992, 10 p.m. on a Thursday night, the spiritual teacher finishes the zikr. He picks up his head, makes eye contact with me. I'm on the other side of the room, and he looks heavenward at the same time. In fluent Turkish, and I don't speak a word of Turkish, but that night, I understood every single word that he said in Turkish. He said, my son, I'm not asking you, I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Wakful Wakifin. Translated, Gift of the Givers. You will serve all people of all races, all religions, all colors, all classes, all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation.
Mm.
But you will serve them unconditionally. You will expect nothing in return, not even a thank you. In fact, in what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, expect to get a kick up your back.
Mm.
If you don't get a kick up your back, regard that as a bonus. Serve people with love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. And remember, the dignity of man is foremost.
Mm.
Clothe the naked, feed the hungry, provide water to the thirsty, and in everything that you do, be the best at what you do.
In those exact words.
Yes.
Wow. It's amazing that you can remember that.
Like not because of ego, because ego is destructive.
Mm.
Be the best. Because you're dealing with human life, human emotion, human suffering, and human dignity. He said, my son, remember that whatever you do, is done through you and not by you.
Mm.
30 years, I'm a living witness.
Mm.
All the things people think I do is not humanly possible. Mm. I asked him, how come when you speak Turkish, I understand, and other people speak Turkish, I don't understand? He said, my son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words become understandable.
Wow.
I asked him, what exactly am I supposed to do?
And you're asking in English?
Yeah, in English. What am I supposed to do? And he said, my son, you will know.
Mm.
For 30 years, I do know.
Mm.
What to do, what not to do, what to touch, what not to touch, how to do it, how not to do it.
That's amazing. The one thing I wanted to ask you, based on the spirituality and the mentality of the Muslim community, I've often seen, firstly, it is often said that the Muslim people are the most successful globally. I've heard that quite a number of times. I've often seen, how Muslim people, Muslim communities, how they are so good at building businesses and building things. So I wanted to ask of you what your thoughts are on where that comes from, where that ability of the Muslim community comes from to build things and to, you know.
It's a combination of factors. One is, it's not a Muslim thing only.
Mm.
It's a cultural thing, or the background that you come from. Remember, Muslims come from different nationalities, different cultures, different race groups. And a lot of it is inborn culture that goes from the parents and the grandparents downwards. They're good in business. In different categories of Muslims, in different from India, from the Arab world, from other parts of the world, they just got it in their blood. Business is in the blood. But in addition to that, from a not a spiritual point of view now, from a religious point of view, we are told that when you give, you always get back more than what you give. Second, we are told that God is not in need of your prayer if you don't care for fellow being.
Mm.
That your prayer will be thrown flat into your face. I'm not interested, because God will say, I don't really need your prayer.
Mm.
The purpose of prayer is to prepare the mind, the intellect, the soul, the spirit, the body for service. Because it's a way of showing public. Because God himself is not coming here.
Mm.
When you respond to God's people, and I've seen it all over, in the Eastern Cape and all over, they pick up their hands.
Yeah,
they said, God,
you
didn't let me down.
Yeah.
You sent somebody to bring the food parcel, to help with the house, to help with the storm, to help with the floods and the drought. You sent somebody. It increases faith of people in God when somebody responds to them.
Mm.
And that's why it is so important that it's ingrained in you, in the Muslim family, from small. Our kids are taught from a small age, take your pocket money and give it.
Mm.
Charity is an essential aspect of what we do. It's very critical. And you'll find that in the month of Ramadan, when we fast, we emphasize the charity must increase tenfold. And because when you're fasting, you understand the hunger of people. When it's winter, you understand the cold of people.
Mm.
So people will start doing blankets. When there's a drought and people have problem with water, they understand the importance of water. So everything in life is a lesson, a real life lesson. And that's why it is as a strict obligatory duty on us to take out charity.
Mm.
We have no choice about that. And we have to give it, but it's say God says it's more important if you do it with free will, not because I put your gun to your head.
I'm assuming that essentially when you started that a lot of the donations came in from the Muslim community.
Yes. Remember in South Africa pre-94, again, being Indian and not being a white and being a Muslim, there was always prejudice. Oh, you guys are terrorists. You guys...
Even in South Africa, I thought that was an American thing.
It was driven a lot by the media and by the communities who were not Muslim and not Indian. Well, more well from the white communities. Not everybody. I mean, everybody is not like that.
Mm.
There was people, and it was driven in the media all the time, because they were not attacking us, but they were talking about Muslims in general all over the world. You guys are like this, and you terrorists and fundamentalists. And people couldn't understand that, And so we all put with the same brush. So the initial money came from the Muslim community and from my own family. We put our own money, and I put my own money too.
That you had made from
my practice. Yeah.
Okay.
And practice was still growing. It wasn't big that time.
Okay.
It was still growing. So from there, whatever I could put, I put, and the family people put, and everybody put, and then Muslim community started supporting it. At some point, the media that started traveling with us, and they realized that this is not a religious thing. It's a humanitarian thing.
Mm.
But that real turnaround came in 2017, many, many years later.
That's quite recent.
Yeah, yeah, when we responded to the fire in Knysna.
Mm.
And then they understood our full capability, because people from the corporate world and everybody and the tourists and everybody come there. How we rebuilt houses, how we sent in medical teams, how we supported the firefighters, how we rolled out food parcels, blankets, hygiene packs, supported the bees, did bee rehabilitation for the bees. 22 million bees were destroyed in that fire.
Mm.
We helped the sheep, the cattle, the pigs, the horses, the cow. We helped the pets, the cat and the dog.
Yeah.
And then we built support the firefighters and rolled out support, every type of support. It was at that point that most of the population and corporate South Africa understood that we were really an organization based on serving fellow human being. Race, religion, color, class didn't matter to us. A few months later, we drilled boreholes in Beaufort West. They were running dry.
Mm.
And at the same point, we started supplying Sutherland with fodder. In the last 6 years, what fodder, what boreholes, what food parcels for the farm workers, and even for the farmers. And then now making pellets, fortified nutritional pellets to feed the sheep.
Wow.
We've spent close to 400 million in trying to save the farmers and the laborers and agriculture and the economy.
Wow.
There's been a major shift in thinking in the country.
Mm.
Corporate South Africa and all groups, white, black, Indian, religious, Hindu, Muslim, everybody, have seen us as people that make a difference. Are following the law, exactly the instruction of a Sufi teacher.
Mm.
Unconditional love. Help without expecting anything in return.
Yeah.
Don't worry about race, color, culture. Came 2018, we helped with Day Zero in Cape Town. 2019, Makanda was in big trouble with the water. We got in there in 2019 and we're still there 4 years later.
Mm.
And then we expanded into Eastern Cape. Then came COVID. And in between all the fires and the floods and the storms, 2019, the floods in KZN. 2020, COVID. We supported 210 hospitals nationwide.
Wow.
With oxygen machines, infrastructure, PPEs, COVID testing teams, you know, food parcels to the nation with lockdown. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of food parcels, supporting hundreds of soup kitchens, helping people in every way. And then came 2021 and the civil unrest in Durban. When in 48 hours, we were in the areas, helping people, calming them down, providing food because everything was burnt. There was no way to buy stuff. And then 2022 came the big floods again. We got involved in that. And what now? There were challenges in the economy. We involved everywhere. Storms, floods, fire. We everywhere.
How do you do it? Because, I mean, I know you've been asked this question so many times. You Gift of the Givers is always one of the first responders in all of these disastrous cases. So how... What is it about how you run the organization that makes you guys so good at what you do? And how can that be replicated by other organizations and nonprofits and people out there so that the good that you guys are doing is, you know, multiplied?
Remember, I told you the organization's got a very strong spiritual basis.
So it's spiritual.
It's spiritual. It's driven by a spiritual gift, you know, that the teacher said, you know, this is your job, your instruction to do that. He said, people will look for you. You pay for your money and people who maybe invested in your company and the people that we serve, both ways.
Mm.
So we do a proper thorough job. But we can't do five half jobs. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Because we're not involved in one thing at a time. We get hit by a disaster in Turkey and Syria. Then we have floods in Western Cape. You're not even finished with that, and there's floods in Northern Cape. And then you got cholera outbreak in Hammanskraal. And then they tell you it's in Vredefort. And then there's E. coli problems in Makanda, and all the clinics are shut. And the water is a problem in Makanda itself, and Fort Beaufort, and Adelaide. And then you got water crisis in the Northern Cape. And then the sheep are dying because there's no food. And then there's a fire in Gogoletu or somewhere in Nyanga or Kayelicha. And then you get a storm at Tornado in Inanda in Durban. All at the same time.
Yeah.
And then you did catch up surgery in the hospital and something needs help there. And the kids need station near the school. And then it's winter, so they got no jersey and no jacket and no blanket. You know, and somebody's thirsty somewhere else. So we got to do all these things, but we got to do it properly. There's no second chance. So our teams, to ask your question, it didn't happen overnight. It's 30 years.
Yeah.
We've evolved. We've got a social media team. We've got a corporate team. We've got a financial team.
Corporate team that deals with
corporates.
Okay.
They deal with corporates because they call them and then we advise them, your project is not good. You're wasting your money and your time. You shouldn't be doing this. And the other advantage of that, 10 people will say, we're going to put food parcels in Kailicha. We said another 9 guys want to do it already. What's the point? Gugulethu, Nyanga, you know, Mndumdumsane, waiting in other parts of Pedi, you know, all other areas are looking for stuff. Why don't you go there, Motherwell, and do somewhere else? They say, okay, what do you advise? And then the team will say, this is a chart. This one is given for that one. You should give it that one. That one is given that one on the other side. So that way we don't duplicate.
Yeah.
More people benefit. They get the corporate maximum value for what they're spending, and the people benefit in different areas. So that's our advantage. That's why when you have one team, that one team knows exactly what everybody else says. They might spread it out to 10 different guys in the organization. Nobody's going to know what the other guy knows. So we have organized teams. Everything to do with donations comes to the corporate team.
Okay.
They need to filter that out. We have what is called the community liaison officer, the CLOs. They are the eyes and ears. They're on the ground with the people. And they say, in this area, this school needs that. There they need a garden. There they need a toilet. There they need school needs infrastructure. Here they need children with special education needs. There they need water. So they know what's on the ground. So when the corporates come, it works both ways. They want something, and we know what they need. So we filter upwards, and the message comes down and said, this is what's required. What can we do? So the teams, and then we have regular meetings, virtual and in person.
How regular?
Very often. You know, in the year, they meet quite a few times. No, we don't need to do it once a week. You know, because it's four times a year or so.
Okay.
And if necessary, we can just slot in, because I'm the link. I go to all areas myself. So whilst we have the CLOs on the ground, and if the corporate team, I'm the guy that's on site. I design projects, I implement them, and the teams follow that. We've got a medical team, a search and rescue team, the canine teams, the equipment team, the truck drivers, the bucket drivers, the packers. Everybody knows their role, and we bring everybody together.
But those are not all full-time.
Full-time. Gifted Givers got no volunteers. The only volunteers we have are the guys that respond to disasters. I don't need them every day.
So how big is your team then?
109 people locally.
109?
Local.
Just in South Africa?
Yes.
Okay.
And 500 overseas.
Okay.
But that number is a little misleading, because of the 500, 320 belong to a hospital that we built in Syria. It's all our stuff. Yeah. Right? We've got staff in Yemen, in Malawi, in Zimbabwe, in Somalia, in Palestine, in Syria, and in parts of Turkey.
Something you said that just got me thinking about your style of leadership, because you said you're on the ground and you're always visiting and you're the link between all of this. Number one, that must be very taxing. That must be very tiring. But number two, just in terms of the leadership style, the opposite of that would be someone leading from an office and just looking at data and information. So I'm very intrigued by that. And maybe can you expand a bit on that and where that comes from, you being on the ground and you always...
I started on the ground. Gift of the Givers was me, one person, and my wife. And then eventually one person came, one staff, and we opened an office. So I've always been on the ground. Nobody in my organization can bluff me, because I've done everything. From packing a truck to carrying a maize meal on my shoulder, from sending a fax to putting a stick in the wall.
Yeah.
So you can't bluff me in any part of the organization. Your things, you're going to tell me nonsense until you fly. I can do it without you, because I've done it myself. I've been to every disaster myself. I've been to every fireplace locally, internationally, myself. I look at projects, I just look at the ground, I design projects. You can't bluff me in any aspect. Whether you bring a drilling team, whether you bring a geologist, you bring a hydrologist, I learn all those things. I'm a practical. I learn from them. I'm not a genius.
Yeah.
I learn from other people. I'm very willing to learn from everybody, whether it's an engineer, whether it's a builder. We got our own building teams. We got our own drilling teams. When I say our own, we contract it out. But they're so busy with us, they've got no time to work for anybody else.
Yeah.
You know? So it's about that. And to me, I always tell the government, you guys are sitting in the office. Do you know what else is going on the outside? You got all these advisors who tell you the things you want to listen. But did you go check yourself? They'll tell you all the right things. You say, everything's going well. The guys
are those senior people.
Because they could protect their son. You know, everything's going well. Don't worry. In the meantime, it's a bloody mess, you know, and nobody knows what's going on. I like to go in the field, because besides the experience you get, the spiritual upliftment, when you see the look in the lady's eyes, or the child getting some kind of food parcel, that's priceless. You can't get that in an office.
Is that something that feeds you?
That feeds me all the time. Okay. You know, and that's why I can't. I'm never at home. I live in planes and on the road. My staff don't even see me. I travel. I did 173 engagements last year. Rather than one, just to one person, Don't try to do 100 and mess it up.
Yeah.
Start off small. When we go to an earthquake, I tell my team, start at the beginning. We're not taking the entire city. We're only taking one street. What happens on the left and the right really is not my problem because we can't save everybody. I'm a very cold guy. My teams call me assassin. I go into a street and they say, straight in the street. Once we finish this job in the street, then we look left and right. As we're helping nobody.
That's an important principle.
Yeah, you have to be realistic, measured outcomes, proper goals, but give your full attention. Not half a job. And and when you do it properly and consistent, how have things changed for us? Black people from the Eastern Cape are working in big corporate companies. And suddenly we got a outbreak, number of calls from black people in companies and corporate companies. What happened? Did you help my granny? You went to Petty? You know, my granny called me, you gave her a food parcel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, I saw in the picture in the social media, that's my auntie that you helped. They're battling there.
Wow.
Thank you very much. And suddenly, everybody opens towards you.
Wow.
And it's a consistent thing that's happening all the time. So from 2017, it's just been growing.
Is that why you're so adamant on, you know, posting stuff and using social media to put that message?
One is transparency. If I don't put any pictures, I don't say anything, they don't say, like, what happened to my money? What do I tell the company people? What do I tell the other investors? What happened to the money? We don't want you to ask. We send you the pictures. So you know what we did. At the same time, it gives you an idea of the type of projects the country needs. It can direct government where they should be acting. It shows the difficulty of people. It shows what help people need. There's a lot of messaging in there.
Just a difficult question to ask would be, you know, you said at the beginning, this is hugely spiritual. So on that point of, you know, publicizing all of these things, what about the spirituality of that in terms of, you know, someone would say, but you're putting people's poverty on display, something like that. Have you ever?
We always ask the people first.
Okay.
Let's take a very classical example. Africana farmers will never put their hand out for anything.
Yeah.
And after a few years of difficulty, they came to us. And they said, you know, when you bring the food parcel for the farm worker, do you mind giving us a food parcel too? So they said, look, we are really in trouble. We are battling. We can't feed our kids.
Is that during COVID?
COVID and with the drought in the Northern Cape. We can't feed our kids anymore. We've taken them out of private school. We're doing homeschooling. We can't put fuel in the bucket to go fetch the fodder for the sheep also. We are down and out. Our credit card is maxed. The co-op is maxed. The overdraft is maxed. We can't do anything. We just can't. We need help. And then they tell us, put our picture on social media. We want people to understand it's not a shame. It's not a problem to be in difficulty, but it's not created by us. Because other people may not ask, and some people shot themselves. So we want to prevent that kind of crisis. The people say, take the pictures, please come. We don't mind you put the pictures because this is the reality of our situation. If people don't know, who's going to help us?
Yeah.
So even when you go to disasters, people say, please put the pictures. We want people to know what our status is. Otherwise, nobody's going to come here to help us. From a spiritual point of view, we have two teachings. Do charity publicly and privately. You think there's a contradiction in terms? No. As a community, you do charity publicly. Because in that way you say, this community or this company or this organization took stuff and gave it here. You're encouraging, you're motivating, you're driving other people to do the same thing. But me as Imtiaz Suleiman, the world doesn't have to know what I did with my private charity.
I see.
Whose house I gave it to, where I went, is nobody's business. That's my personal business. It's not to get. But as Gift of the Givers, yes, I'm the face of Gift of the Givers. But as Gift of the Givers, we took your money and we put it there.
I see.
Go ask
so
the person.
So it's more of an accountability,
yes,
transparency.
Yes, full transparency. Tomorrow you can't say the money disappeared. And of course, remember, when you're serving people, you want more support to help more people. Because when you go there, you can't help everybody. There's 50 people need wheelchairs. You can only do 5. So what happens to the other 45? But when they see the 5 wheelchairs, you may get 10 the following week. You can give the other 10 people wheelchairs. So it's about marketing so you can help other people benefit themselves. They become independent. They become, in their minds, it causes mental illness too. Oh, I'm troubling my mother, my sister, my brother wanted to come take me off the bed. They must take me to the table. They must take me to the toilet. They must take me to the bath. I'm stuck the whole day. They're stuck. They can't do anything. What do you do?
Mm.
And because you don't have a wheelchair, four or five family members get involved. It's heartbreaking. Shit, one wheelchair. Everything changes.
Mm.
And I'm telling you about wheelchairs because tomorrow we're launching the wheelchair project for the Eastern Cape.
Yeah.
Not that we haven't done it before, but a journalist wrote about there's a shortage of 5,000 wheelchairs in Eastern Cape, and we're starting off with 1,000 tomorrow. Not that we're starting for the first time tomorrow. We've been giving out wheelchairs, but symbolically, one Mandela Day, we're rolling out 1,000 wheelchairs, and we're doing the first 50 tomorrow morning.
Let's look at. I think that's an amazing project. I was actually talking to one of your colleagues who heads up your team in the Eastern Cape about that, and the stories she was telling me are just, you know, they are heartbreaking of how people have to carry their children because they don't have wheelchairs and all of that. Let's look at your journey. It's been 31 years or so of Gift of the Givers Foundation. You and the team. We know it's not you, but through you, a wonderful organization has been built. I'm sure that you've made mistakes. You know, I've listened to a couple of the conversations you've had with other people, some podcasts. Number one, let me say, I was trying to look at the articles that are written about Gift of the Givers, and it was difficult to find something negative, you know, because I was trying to see, you know, what are people saying? And everything that I was reading is positive. And I was thinking to myself, I don't know what to make of that because there must be mistakes that you've made as an organization that maybe other people have discovered and written about. And then I came across an article that was written about you and the foundation and IFP and some parcels that were given and, you know, that story. But I wanted to ask you in terms of mistakes, because for me, authentic leadership is also about learning from mistakes, because we're human, we make mistakes in our organizations and what we build. Are there any mistakes that you can look back and say, maybe that project, we shouldn't have handled it like that, or we shouldn't have gone into that community? Is there anything like that when you reflect back? Or?
Because it's spiritual, I haven't found any issues. I can say certain things. I'm OCD. I think I let go too late.
Okay.
Yeah, everything I want to do myself. Because that's the issue of trust now. So everything do a little late.
Trust with the team.
What if people are new people to work for you?
Okay.
Right? Can they do it as good as you? You know, that is one challenge. The second thing is we never had that kind of money to keep paying salaries because I had no volunteers. So in time, as it grew up, we brought people in. But I should have maybe have brought them in a little earlier.
Mm.
But I learned very quickly. And I didn't micromanage the people. I allowed people to develop their own skills and said, do what you want. Come with a new, fresh idea. Sure, that's the biggest mistake I made. They all come with 15 different ideas and they're all correct. And that's why the organization just went straight through the roof. And they feel empowered. They feel honored. They feel respected. They feel they're valued.
Which is a great thing.
And they do a great thing. You know. And then if 15 guys, people say, you know, be in management and you delegate, it doesn't help. The work increases. You know, and you're going to check, make sure everything's going right. But I have no problem with that. I should have probably done it a little earlier. The IFP thing wasn't a mistake. It was mischief.
Mm.
IFP had paid for the food parcels themselves.
So I read that.
What the ANC didn't realize then is the IFP didn't ask for the food parcels on the day of that election. They'd asked for it 6 months previously.
Mm.
But because of the floods and so many different areas, that area was earmarked for that date long before the election was set for that.
Maybe to give people some context, because maybe some people don't know. Can you give us a 30-second what happened, what was going on?
No, the ANC said we gave the IFP food parcels to give to the people to vote for them for the IFP. That wasn't true. And the IFP had actually given 250,000 rand, but not for that area, you know, to just help people generally.
Yeah.
And as we do for donors, if a political party gives money, they're most welcome to tell the people, this is our money. We bought 100 food parcels. You can do it to corporate companies. The corporate company can come and say, we paid the money and here's a food parcel. What stops a political party from doing that? Right? But they can't take mileage with somebody else's money. That's what some political parties want to do. They want to come stand with you and say, we helped you. They haven't. And that was something about Zuma. You know, when you went with Zuma somewhere, he would tell the people, don't thank the president of the country. Don't thank the president of the ANC. We didn't bring anything. He says, you want to thank somebody? Thank them. they brought, well, I didn't bring anything for you. It was always... Was that,
did you guys work together on projects?
Many times. Or? I met Zuma many times. You know, I mean, we do projects. And as a guest, you know, as the president of the head of state, people invite the head of state.
They come
to events. They invite ministers. We come. But he never took credit once for something that was never his. Always. You know, he said, this is help them, thank them. That's Don't amazing. Come to me. Come to him. Go tell him. We had a very good relationship.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So I've been to Tuli house. I've been to his house where he stays. You know, I've been to in Kandla. Yeah, yes. Invited me many times. And so we did those kind of stuff. So it's always, so they said no, the foot passes were there to get the election. It was nothing to do with that. That date was booked by us because we have a schedule. And it so happened that a by-election came and it coincided with the date. Mm. You know, and only once in 30 years.
Yeah.
Obviously, something is not making sense. If you do that consistently all the time, then you can say that.
Yeah.
But what about how the ANC has benefited in so many areas that we've been to? They don't talk about that. But people with the ANC, within the ANC told us, we apologize. What they said is incorrect.
Do you have, I'm sure you've got your own political views. I've never heard you speak publicly about, you know, whether politically you vote for any political party or anything like that. I mean, we're going into 2024 now. I think part of how we can fix the country is to put the right people in power so that
there's no other way.
Manage. So what do you think? What do you think just in terms of where the country is going, the politics, ANC, EFF, all of these parties, you know?
There's good people in every party. We need to understand that.
Yeah.
There's a lot. People need to understand why they're coming to government. Why do you come to government? You say you're serving the people. Now you have to make up your mind. Are you serving the people or are you serving yourself?
Mm.
Mandela, Sisulu, the others serve the people. They didn't serve themselves. Are you going to follow the same example? If you're serving the people, it's fine. But the people must make the choice. Don't let the political party make the choice for you.
Mm.
I tell people now, don't duck the next election. Vote.
Yeah.
But you must select your candidate. Who's your candidate? Your priest has been a very good man. For the last 15 years, you know the man. He comes at night, he comes in the day, he comes, checks the house, check how you're doing. He's a good man. Your CPF guy, community police forum guy, your local some administrator, you know, somebody always there for the people, not asking for anything in return.
Mm.
Consistent for the last 15, 20 years. Good character, good person. Tell him, please, stand. You know what? We want you. You will serve the people. Government does not tell us what they want us to do. We must tell them what we want.
We as the people.
We as the people tell them, you don't tell us what do you want to implement. We will tell you what we want.
Yeah.
That's how the country should work. And if you don't do the job, we take you out. We're going to give you a good idea if you don't do the job properly. You know, that's what we need to do. And then only people who really want to serve or competent or dedicated will take that because it's a lousy job. It's a thankful job.
I'm putting you on the spot here, but should we be voting for the ANC? Should we be voting them out next year?
I won't say that because there are a lot of good people in the ANC. And I keep making this point. Don't say government is corrupt. Everybody in government is not corrupt. There are people in government that's corrupt. Government is not corrupt. And when you say government is corrupt, then I'll tell you what our corporates that are corrupt. Where did the corruption start?
Mm.
Who inflated the prices? Who backhanded people? Who encouraged them to inflate the invoices? Who did that?
Mm.
Came from corporate South Africa. The problem is not the system. The problem is the individual. You see, if you've got 1,000 individuals and they're all rotten, they'll mess up the best system in the world.
Mm.
And you've got 1,000 good guys that care for the people, they'll fix up any messed up system. It's all about spirituality, it's about the individual.
Mm.
You want to fix the country? Look in the mirror. Look at yourself first. Are you ethical? Four important qualities. Do you have spirituality, morality, values, and ethics? And to the young people, when you make progress, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget your grandfather, your parents who've striven to put you where you are. Unfortunately, a lot of young people have forgotten where they've come from and the sacrifice what their parents have done to put them where they are today. It's a glorious life, a materialistic life. Have the fun. You're forgetting the hurt and the pain you're causing to people who suffered for so many years. Please don't ever forget that. I admire the people who pay the black tax, or look after 20 or 30 family members or find it important to do that. That, from a spiritual point of view, we call it a huge blessing to take care of the elderly people, to take care of the mother, to take care of children who are vulnerable. That's a huge blessing. What it fills the soul, no one in the world can buy that.
Mm.
And we need to understand that very, very clearly that, yes, make money, but do it the right way.
Mm.
Don't trample somebody else. Don't be dishonored. Be dishonest. Do things the right way. Remember your family. You will see it. You may not be a multi-billionaire, but then again, what's the point of being a multi-billionaire? How much can you eat? So we have a teaching, what you don't spend is not yours.
Wow.
So I give every child, every year, I tell me, yes, 2 billion.
What you don't spend is not yours.
Of course. What you don't spend is not yours. If I give everybody 2 billion rand, please tell me how many lifetimes you're going to need to spend that money. You can buy 50 houses, but you can only stay in one. You can have 20 bedrooms in the house, you can only sleep in one. You can have 7 cars, you can drive one, the 6th, the battery is going to go dead. The tire is going to go flat.
Billionaires don't like you.
No, a lot of them have reflected.
Is it?
A lot of top guys, CEOs, MDs, auditors have come and said, what have we done with our lives? It's a pointless, useless life.
Mm.
We made money and made money and made money and made money. Now what? There is no contentment.
Mm.
It's from a spiritual point of view, the richest guy on earth is the guy that is most content, because then he don't need anything else. And as you get older, if you eat more, you're going to get sick. And all that money you're going to go to hospital with. So it doesn't make any sense. So it, when you make the money, nobody's stopping you from making the money. Please make the money. Create jobs.
Yeah.
Make people happy, you know. There's a man in Durban. So somebody was wanted to buy his factory out and said, you don't put machines here. You can make so much more money with machines. So the guy said, you're right. I can make much more money with machines. No doubt. But he said, my father told me that every job I create, every night when that man goes home, that man, his wife, and his children pray for me.
Mm.
Because I gave them a blessing, a job. The moment I put the machine, where the machine is going to pray for me? You know, that's why it's better to create jobs. And I said, yes, I make less money, but I still got a house. I still eat.
Yeah.
I'm still surviving. What more do I need? It's about satisfaction, contentment, being grateful.
Last couple of questions before we let you go, Doc. One is, I know you don't want to go into politics.
No.
You've said that multiple times on multiple platforms. But let's assume.
But also, it's a spiritual instruction.
Is it?
I was given an instruction in 1995. The teacher saw way ahead and he told me, you will never enter politics. You will never work for government. You will always work with the government.
Mm.
But for 30 years, you've seen me work with the government. We fight in the day, punch each other, but at night we're friends.
With government?
Yes.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, you know, we because I'm outspoken. You know,
But
there are the good guys who understand the value of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And as a result, they want to do the right things too. The good people in government.
I wanted to ask you, based on that, I wanted to paint a scenario. Let's assume that for some reason the spiritual instruction changes. And he comes and says,
no, South Africa, I'll tell you something else. South Africans are too good. They said, we're going to write to the spiritual teacher. We're going to tell him to change instruction.
Why not? But let's assume, because I was thinking about this and reflecting on this today. Let's assume that the spiritual instruction changes and he says, okay, now is the time, maybe 100 days, you must be president. Let's examine those 100 days with the 31 plus years you have of working with people from all sorts of communities. What do you do? What do you change?
I change a lot of things. First of all, I change the ethics of people. You know, people work in hospitals, they work in schools, and they're civil servants, but they think they're entitled. Not everybody. A doctor goes and works in a hospital, and then he's got permission to do private practice. He doesn't give his full time to the hospital. He gives more time to the private practice. What happens? Health system is very bad. You know, they don't look after the people. It's not the health system. It's the unethical behavior of individuals. They're not taking care. They're getting paid for something which they haven't done.
But how do you change that?
You have strong management. Country needs strong management. That's a big problem in this country. Leaders will say, you don't do your job, you're out.
Fire the wrong people, get the right people in.
Yeah, get the right people in. No, and no mercy. Sorry. As I deal with compassion, but no mercy. Anybody that messes the system up, in ESCOM, they asked me, they said, if I see people breaking the system, shoot on sight, I'll have no mercy.
Mm.
Because you're affecting the lives of 65 million people.
Mm.
Children are suffering, people are suffering, jobs are being lost because of the greed of some people. Sorry, you don't belong in our system, you know. And I would be very, very hard. I retrain the cops. And I tell the cops, if you're scared to die, go find another job. Go into parks and recreation. Go do something else. It's not your job. Pacelli has told him many times. People laugh at him. But he said many times, don't die with your gun in your holster.
Mm.
You enroll there. This is a calling. People don't go to a country because they got a good health system or good education. They go to a country where the security is good. Mm. No other reason.
Yeah.
So if you do the security well for your own people, you'll have lots of tourists that will bring a lot of income to your country. They will come and stay and be happy. They feel safe in that country. So in the same way, I'll fix health. There's lots of things. Maintenance, management, infrastructure, equipment, and there's one more category, and staff, personnel. Mm. Five crucial things to fix in the health system. You can't cut registrar posts and say there's no money. Registrars train doctors, junior doctors.
Mm.
They become specialists. They bring dignity to the system. They improve the quality of healthcare. You cut the registrars, you kill the entire system. Schools, tell teachers, please come back. But you can't be taking your grandfather's time and being relaxed and being easy about it. You want, that could be your child. Train the child. Bring in more special education need teachers. There's kids with learning disorders. Where's the future for them?
Mm.
There's not enough trained people. Psychologists, the whole country's messed up since COVID. Mental health issues are a huge issue in the country.
Yeah.
Universities take 7 clinical, 7 educational, and 7 counseling psychologists. We need thousands of them. You talk about job creation. Really? We need thousands of nurses, doctors, psychologists. Where's the big deal? What's the complication? Finding the people. You got too much of guys in the civil service, in the administration. A director, a chief director, guy below that director, a PA, PA for the PA. Course,
yes.
15 different people for one job. And not one guy can sign the form. And the country gets paralyzed. Remove all that. We are 109 people. We run the entire projects in the whole country. Yeah. That includes drivers, staff, receptionists, finance guys. If you can do it, why can't you?
A lean government.
Lean and mean. And 15 guys, they want to say, no, it's not my fault, it's his fault. And that one says that one's fault. And that one says that one's fault. But me, 2 guys. It's either you or him. Nobody else. Who did it wrong? You'll see the efficiency. And my teams work.
Yeah.
They're efficient because they're small in number and they take responsibility. And above all, you don't have to police anybody. You look in the mirror, you have those 4 qualities I spoke about. Spirituality, morality, values and ethics. You'll police yourself.
Mm.
Nobody will need to police you. And when we reach that level, we can fix anything.
That's amazing.
Don't need money. You don't That's need amazing. Money because you're accountable upstairs and to yourself.
Mm. Doc, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sitting down with us. Last couple of questions, just on your personal life. So what do you do to relax? What do you do to unwind? Because you're always on the road. You're always busy. I'm asking because I think looking after your mindset is important. Looking after your mental well-being is important. So what do you do to...
You asked me earlier, did I make any mistake? I made one very big mistake, which is personal. It's not the business. The spiritual teacher said, and he knew my personality, he said 1/3 for yourself, 1/3 for the work, and 1/3 for the family.
Mm.
Meaning that's how you divide your time. Personal growth, family time, and every time I went back and I said, this formula doesn't work. 4/3 I give to the organization, nothing for myself, nothing to the family. That's one thing I would have liked to reverse. It's too late now. But if I had to start 30 years ago, I would have done it differently. Not neglected them the way I did. So I laughed. I said, look, I got this problem. I don't create the disasters. I would respond to them. And it's very hard to tell a child or a parent, sorry, I can't come to you, when you know that you got the skill to respond to multiple disasters at the same time.
You can send other people, Doc.
Yeah, remember I told you? Management, they all start increasing the capacity. And you got to say, yes, I said, even now too, I already got a succession plan in place.
Mm.
I don't lead the teams anymore. They go, but I still got to take care of them to make sure they're safe, they're okay. My phone doesn't switch off. During the Sudan,
what does taking care of them mean? Checking in on what they're doing?
If they get stuck somewhere, because their life's on my head. So like Sudan evacuation, 10 days I didn't sleep because the network only works at a certain time. And the guy sends a message at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're sleeping, the chance of getting the guy out is almost zero. You can't miss that call. And because some South Africans missed the call because the network failed, they got stuck inside.
It's crazy.
And we had to do other things to get them out. And then other countries' nationals wanted out. to me, we don't look at nationality. We look at it as a human being, as a human being.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I could have been that human being. It could have been my child. What do you do about that? So that's the mistake. So us, in terms of relaxation, I need to watch heavy action movies. That's the thing that relaxes
heavy
me.
Heavy action movies. Heavy action movies.
Yeah.
Quickly, what movies do you like watching?
Anything with Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal.
Mel Gibson.
Those are old people.
Sylvester Stallone. Sylvester Jason Statham. Who are the newer guys? Gerard
Butler.
Your
favorite of all time?
Old days, Clint Eastwood.
What?
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, you're too young then.
Books that you read?
I've got no time to read anything. The only thing I read is WhatsApp.
Thank you so much, Doc. Thank you for your time. Thank you for the great work that you do.
A pleasure.
Thanks.
Nice to meet you.